Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, November 7th, 2011. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. More U.S. 95 tar sands shipments through Moscow tomorrow night and others expected Thursday. Idaho inmate on death row gets no clemency. Occupy Pullman. Protesters at Bank of America withdraw cash. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The Idaho Commission of Pardons and Parole has rejected a clemency request from convicted murderer Paul Ezra Rhodes, who is scheduled to die by lethal injection in Idaho's new death chamber on Friday, November 18th. Commission Director Olivia Craven said Rhodes will not even be granted a requested clemency hearing. Only if clemency is recommended by the commission can the governor grant clemency. Rhodes was sentenced to death for killing Susan Michaelbacher and Stacy Baldwin in 1987. He was also convicted of killing Nolan Haddon, also in 1987, and received a life sentence for that murder. The Federal Defender's Office in Boise issued a statement today saying, "We maintain the commission is making a grave and irreversible mistake by relying primarily on a paper record. It is shameful that Mr. Rhodes will not have an opportunity to present his entire case and show that the man he is today is not someone whom society would want to put to death." A federal judge could still stop the execution. Idaho Governor C.L. Butch Otter issued a statement saying, "Paul Ezra Rhodes has taken full and unfettered advantage of his right of due process of law for more than two decades. That process is running its course. The law requires and justice demands that Mr. Rhodes be held accountable for his actions as a judge and jury have directed." Port of Pasco Executive Director Jim Toomey clarified some of the numbers reported recently concerning Korean-made ExxonMobil tar sand shipments traveling through that port. The numbers are of interest to activists who oppose ExxonMobil using U.S. Highway 12 along the Clearwater and Lockshaw Wild and Scenic River Corridor through Idaho, as well as those who oppose tar sands development in Alberta altogether. Here's Jim Toomey of the Port of Pasco speaking with KRFP this morning. What is the number of ExxonMobil shipments that will be going through the port, tar sands shipments?
The port to date has received 83 modules, and the definition of the modules are a bit uncertain, but in essence for us, a module is what comes in as a single unit on a barge. Those modules will be broken down into smaller components to be compatible with on-road shipments. We do anticipate, for planning purposes, we're anticipating to receive another 17 to 20 modules over the next 2 to 2.5 months. So when all is said and done, we anticipate receiving something in the 100 modules. And what that translates to for on-the-road shipments, I really don't know.
Although most of the full-size modules that landed at Lewiston were split in half, so maybe that would be around 200.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay. There's some talk about splitting them into fourths here, so I really don't know the details of what happens once they leave the port or how many pieces are broken down into.
Okay, and another question. People have observed some of the ExxonMobil shipments at the Port of Lewiston have been moved back two blocks towards the waterfront. Do you expect any of these ExxonMobil shipments to be heading downstream to the Port of Pasco and then shipped out of there?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. We're not aware of any, what you would refer to from Lewiston as downriver shipments, but you know, I'm not so sure that we would be in the loop. We get notice of a shipment coming in, and whether it's coming upriver or downriver, it's not something that we're made aware of.
That was Port of Pasco Executive Director Jim Toomey. Although there are indications ExxonMobil might give up on using U.S. Highway 12 as a route for tar sands shipments, the tar sands shipments will keep coming up U.S. 95 from the Port of Lewiston through Moscow. ExxonMobil's hauler, the Dutch company Mammoet, announced today three of the smaller tar sand shipments will be leaving the Port of Lewiston a half hour apart starting at 8 p.m. tomorrow. Because the largest load is 115,000 pounds, they will not require the large hydraulic trailers used for the largest split megaloads. However, two of the loads will be 24 feet wide, and the third will be 22 feet wide, meaning all three will block two lanes of traffic on US 95 as they roll north. The largest load will be 115,000 pounds, 24 feet wide, 15 feet high, and 90 feet long. The second largest will be 110,000 pounds, 24 feet wide, 14 feet high, and 90 feet long. The third shipment will be 90,000 pounds, 22 feet wide, 15 feet high, and 95 feet long. The three loads will bunch up as a single convoy south of Moscow for the trip through the city, but will travel independently otherwise. All three are expected to reach the Montana state line by early Wednesday morning. Helen Yost of Wild Idaho Rising Tide says the group is planning more protests.
We had heard from city officials that there are going to be two sets of four this week on Tuesday and Thursday evenings. But since then, just this afternoon, about two or three, ExxonMobil, they announced on their website that they're just running three smaller loads through on Tuesday evening at the usual time, so they should be coming through town sometime between 10 and 11. There is no word, as usual, as they typically wait to the last minute, perhaps to discourage protests about the Thursday night loads.
Okay, so you did hear about another set of loads Thursday, and those would probably be bigger ones because they're running out of smaller ones down at Lewiston, right?
It's hard to say. A few of us went down to the Port of Lewiston late last week, and we saw about two dozen loads parked in the usual staging area, which is upriver from the port.
And those are split megaloads?
Yes, they're all various sizes, everything from the light blue boxes, which tend to weigh the most, over 400,000 pounds, some of them, down to just some of these smaller pieces that we'll likely see coming through on Tuesday night.
Okay, and what are the plans for protests this week, both Tuesday and Thursday?
Well, on Tuesday, we intend to host something called Nightmare on Hall Street, and we're asking folks to, as usual, of course, bring their protest signs and friends and family and whatever musical instruments they'd like to bring, and even their dogs if they like, but wear your Halloween costumes if you still have them, because we hope to illustrate how much death and destruction is coming about from Alberta tar sands where these loads are going with our scary costumes.
Okay, and you mean by death and destruction the impacts of climate change or the impacts on of the indigenous people living in the Athabasca watershed, or what are you talking about there?
Well, there's all kinds of damages that arise from both the region around the tar sands as well as the impacts globally from climate changes that are wrought by this largest point source of carbon emissions on the entire North American continent. And then, of course, downwind and downriver from these upgrader plants, which are composed of these loads coming through Moscow. There's plenty of pollution, all kinds of heavy metals as they burn coke, which has pretty much every toxic element you could think of in its composition. So there's, you know, fallout in those factories as well as poisoning of the rivers from massive lakes, some of them stretching up to 50 kilometers, that hold all the recycled water that gets used in these industrial processes.
Has Wild Idaho Rising Tide come up with protest plans for Thursday night as well?
Thursday, we actually intend for it to be a larger action. We haven't quite designed what we're going to do yet, but there will be two very pertinent films to this topic occurring on Wednesday, and at those venues, we hope to recruit more protesters Fighting Goliath, Megalodes, and the Power of Protest is occurring at 3 p.m. on Wednesday afternoon in the UI Agricultural Building, room 106. That's at the corner of Rayburn and 6th Streets. And then in the evening at 7 over in the Beasley Coliseum on the Washington State University campus, there'll be a free showing of the film Carbon Nation, which is upbeat in that it talks about alternatives to our dirty carbon energy habits. And that should be well attended as well. So, yeah, we're hoping that folks can turn out for both the movies and both protests.
Okay, well, that's about all the time I have, unless you got something really quick to add.
Yeah, I would like to add, if you would like to attend the protests on both Thursday and Tuesday evening, we are meeting at around City Hall, about the corner of 2nd and Washington Street, sometime between 9 and 10 in preparation of the loads coming through at 10. And some nights we march and sometimes we don't, so get there plenty early just to be with everyone else at the protest.
That was Helen Yost of the Moscow Anti-Tar Sands Group, Wild Idaho Rising Tide. Crews hired by ExxonMobil removed the ruptured section of the Silvertip oil pipeline from underneath the Yellowstone River at Laurel, Montana, on Saturday afternoon. The pipeline broke on July 1st, sending 42,000 gallons of crude oil into the Yellowstone River. At first, ExxonMobil said the oil was sweet crude from northern Wyoming, but later reports said heavy tar sands crude may have been moving in the pipeline as well, which would have increased wear on the 8-inch diameter pipe. The Billings Gazette yesterday called the spilled oil medium crude. The paper quoted ExxonMobil spokesperson Patty Errico saying the broken pipe will be preserved and sent to an unnamed independent third party for analysis. However, the article goes on to say the U.S. Department of Transportation's Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration will examine the pipe and conduct metallurgic testing and then make an announcement on the cause of the break. Errico said it will take several weeks to extract all of the pipe segments and debris from the area at Laurel. The Billings Gazette reports that in September, ExxonMobil replaced the section of pipeline and oil is now flowing through the new section nearby. That section is 40 to 70 feet below the riverbed, below a layer of shale. The pipe that broke was 5 to 7 feet below the riverbed, and it broke after an extended period of flooding in late spring and early summer. Environmental groups will make their case tomorrow to end wolf hunts in Idaho and Montana before a 3-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. So far, 150 wolves have been killed by hunters in the Northern Rockies this year. Montana's hunt has a 220 wolf cap, but Idaho's does not have a cap. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is monitoring the hunts, but does not plan to intervene with state fish and wildlife agencies because they have already declared wolf populations recovered. Dave Hornoff of the National Wolf Watcher Coalition told the Associated Press, "They get a bad rap. They're the big bad wolves. But you see them with their pups, you watch them raise their pups, and you watch the pups grow up. You become very attached. Dying in this manner is very hard to accept. It's disheartening." Assistant Attorney General Ignacio Moreno said Congress had the right to make the policy choice regarding wolves. He added that the plaintiff's separations of power argument is flawed and says prior courts have called for a higher degree of judicial tolerance when Congress intervenes in a matter subject to litigation. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow. The Tri-Cities Herald reports the Hanford Advisory Board believes the 2011 Hanford Life Cycle Scope, Schedule, and Cost Report may have underestimated the total amount it would cost to clean up the Hanford Nuclear Reservation. The report put the cost of cleaning up the world's most contaminated site at $115 billion. The amount is supposed to represent the cost of cleanup ending in 2060, plus the cost for keeping the cleaned-up waste from spreading. However, the Hanford Advisory Group says some of the work they expect would be needed was not included in the report. Gerald Paulette of the Seattle-based watchdog group Heart of America Northwest said the report is a big step forward, but not the final word on the cost. Paulette said it is intended to be a reasonable cost estimate of cleanup as we understand it today. Portland Police Chief Mike Reese met with Occupy Portland Safety Committee members after he gave an order to police last week to have gas masks, batons, and helmets immediately available and prepared to deploy pepper spray and other agents if protesters don't stay on sidewalks. Reese did not back down on his order at the meeting Friday. At the meeting, Gina Ronning of Occupy Portland said, "Threatening people to use chemical weapons as a means to get people on the sidewalks, it's very fearful and threatening and makes people want to retaliate." Reese's announcement came after an incident last Wednesday when an officer was allegedly slightly injured when he was pushed into a bus while deployed at an Occupy Portland protest. Meanwhile, 11 Occupy protesters attached themselves to a metal barrel filled with concrete late Saturday at the federally owned Shrunk Plaza, effectively reoccupying the area that had been cleared of campers by Portland police. Last night, Portland police spokesperson Pete Simpson said for the time being, the Federal Protective Services, which has jurisdiction on the plaza, has decided to let the occupiers stay. About 30 Occupy Pullman protesters were picketing outside the Bank of America branch Saturday morning for National Bank Transfer Day. One sign read, "Demand justice. It is wrong to set up a huge mortgage scam at the expense of innocent Americans, then take taxpayer money to bail yourself out of the crisis you created, and then use your money for your own gain as you privatize all the profits and socialize all the losses. This is called stealing. That makes you criminals." KRFP citizen journalist Polly D spoke with Jax, who's the woman holding the sign.
"Well, we are out here protesting the destruction of social capital is what it comes down to. All of these things that don't appear to be connected, foreclosures, loss of jobs, lack of health care, disenfranchisement of voters, disenfranchisement of the poor, and so on, is all connected to the influence, gross over-influence, of corporate money in politics, where business has literally taken over our government to their own gain. So I think it's really, really cut and dried. So, you know, people think, oh, they're out there because they want to bail out. They're out there because they want money. They're out there because of this. It's not for that at all. We are literally here, again, to sort of protest this destruction of our social capital in this country."
Paulie D. also spoke with Terry Sterling of Cul-de-Sac, Idaho, who was in Zuccotti Park on Wall Street 2 weeks ago on the day the police said they were going to evict everyone from the park and not allow the tents to return.
"I went down there and participated for the whole day, telling my story about how I came from Idaho to stand up and speak to my $150,000 in student loan debt, the fact that I lost my home from one of these big banks, that I'm unemployed and have been. I lost a $40,000 a year job, and I've been unemployed for over 2 years, and my unemployment is running out. My first mortgage was with Wells Fargo, and we refinanced to HBC, and it wasn't long after that they told us our payments would go down. In fact, our payments went up $300 a month, and we tried to sell our house, and ended up having to do a short sale and came out with no money, because the bank charged us $30,000 in prepayment penalties, even though they were going to foreclose on our home. Bank of America is actually my bank, and I would love to go in there and close my account out right now. I've tried several times, but I've been redlined, red flagged, whatever you want to call it, by these big banks. And so not so a credit union. There's no other bank in my community. I've tried the community banks. I've tried the credit unions. I've tried everywhere. There's no other bank that will take me. But I believe that Bank of America doesn't follow the regulated practices, because had they done the credit check, they would have never allowed me anyway. So it makes me speculate why they're taking people with poor credit. And you know, that's just a way that they can get us in more overdraft fees. They're selecting sort of the cream of the crop, if you will, of poor people that they know that they can make the most money off of, which is the most pathetic thing of all."
That was Terry Sterling of Cul-de-Sac, Idaho, protesting in front of the Bank of America branch in Pullman on Saturday. Some in the crowd expressed concerns that the Occupy movement will be met with increasing police repression and violence over time. Jax spoke about the reports of an increase in what she called agent provocateurs in the Occupy movement around the country during the last week or so.
Well, hopefully we'll deal with it the way they dealt with it in Oakland, when the three or four agent provocateurs there outside of the Whole Foods attempted to incite the crowd to riot by smashing some windows and lobbing paintballs. They were surrounded by a really goodly number of genuine protesters who, you know, it was a bit of a fist fight, I gather, but they suppressed these people. It's like, we are not going to do this. We're not going to let you do this. And there's a, you know, the social media component is incredibly helpful. So there's a huge amount of information floating around now for protesters. What is an agent provocateur? What are you looking for? What do you do if that happens? How do you identify these people? And they're being exposed, actually, which is kind of nice. So literally, you'll see the picture of the person in civilian dress at the protest, and then right next to them, here's the person in badge, here's their badge ID, here's the email. So I think that if we just look after our own that way, I think we'll do okay with that. And to not succumb to just being pissed, because people are angry. They're hungry. And unfortunately, history shows us the longer people are pressured, the hungrier they get, the more violent and vicious they're going to become. They're going to build a guillotine, and they're going to put people's heads in it, which, you know, this is a real test for America, I think. Can we achieve this peacefully?
That was Jack speaking at the Occupy Pullman protests in downtown Pullman Saturday. You can hear all of Pauly D's Occupy Pullman interviews from this weekend tonight at about 8:30 right here on KRFP 92.5. Activists on the Palouse met Saturday at the University of Idaho to work on laying the groundwork for a new Northwest Coalition for Human Rights. According to a report in the Daily News, Kootenai County Human Rights Task Force Chair Tony Stewart said the former group, the Northwest Coalition Against Malicious Harassment, founded by the late Catholic priest Bill Wasmith of Coeur d'Alene after his parish was bombed by Aryan Nations racists in 1986, lost its mission when it moved to Seattle. Addressing dozens of activists, Stewart said local organizations like the Latah County Human Rights Task Force stay on track by using their proceeds to support their missions. He said they don't have staff or buildings, but they have remarkable volunteers. Stewart said he's against human rights groups confronting racists at their own events. He said Martin Luther King Jr. never went to a Klan rally because he was too smart. He suggested instead holding human rights events at other locations at the same time. The Moscow City Council has a short agenda tonight if you don't count the seven items on the consent agenda, which is voted on as a whole, although any council member can remove an item from the consent agenda and place it on the regular agenda for discussion. The regular agenda includes a request for a city right-of-way encroachment from Anytime Fitness owner Richard Taylor. Taylor, who owns the business in the former Sandpiper restaurant building on North Main Street, wants to install a heating, ventilation, air conditioning unit 5 feet into the city right-of-way. The HVAC unit would still be 1.5 feet away from the existing sidewalk. City staff is recommending the council not approve the encroachment because it might impede on future uses of the right-of-way. Also on the regular agenda is a Citizen Commission report on the activities of the Fair and Affordable Housing Commission presented by City Community Development Director Bill Belknap. Consent agenda items include approval of a $68,600 professional services contract with JUB to design and construct new filter screens for the water treatment plant, approval of a $298,000 consultation agreement with Nelson Nygaard and Associates of Portland for planning and designing the multimodal transportation center, accepting the lowest qualifying bid of $119,600 from Specialty Pump of Spokane to replace the city's well number 6 pump, approval of a liquor license for La Madrid Mexican Restaurant and Tapas Bar, and approval of a city fiber optic cable lease with First Step Internet. Tonight's city council meeting begins at 7 p.m. at City Hall. Tomorrow is election day. Four candidates are running for three open seats on the 6-seat Moscow City Council. They are Aaron Ament, Dan Karskellen, Wayne Krause, and Tom Lamar. Voters can cast ballots for up to three candidates, and the top three vote-getters will win four-year terms. You can listen to the archived KRFP City Council Candidates Forums on the Radio Free Moscow website, where you can also listen to the Chamber of Commerce Candidates Forum. Polls will be open from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. at the Latah County Fairgrounds 4-H building, which is located across White Avenue from Safeway on the east side of town. Those who live in the Moscow School District can also vote tomorrow during the same hours on the $1.97 million permanent override levy increase election. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service, there's a 20% chance of rain and snow showers tonight. Snow level 2,800 feet, otherwise cloudy, low 27. Cloudy tomorrow, then gradually becoming sunny, high 41. Mostly cloudy Tuesday night, low 29. Mostly sunny Wednesday, high near 45. Partly cloudy Wednesday night, low 29, and mostly sunny on Thursday, high 49. Currently overcast and 35 degrees. We've got news and opinions from the West Side with Eat the Airwaves coming up next, followed by Flashpoints at around 6:30. And at 7:30, we'll have the Mark David Show, a talk show. And at around 8:30, you can hear some of the Occupy Pullman recordings here on KRFP Moscow. If you want to help KRFP Moscow keep newscasts like this on the air, be sure to donate Radio Free Moscow's address for sending donations and annual memberships is 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. You can go to the radiofreemoscow.com or krfp.org websites to find out ways to donate to the station. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. This is KRFP Moscow.
From the studios once again,